Okay, so I'll start then. Okay, I think we've through the most technical glitches and challenges. This is such a modern room. We're getting it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, my name is Jan Gustav Strømnes. I have the honor to try to start this side event. I've been asked by the combined secretariats of Stockholm, Rotterdam, and the Basel Convention to open this meeting, or to use proper CSD lingo, this side event. On my side here is Kay Ono, program officer with the Stockholm Convention, and she'll also do part of the introduction here. To the common man and woman, chemicals are substances shrouded in a veil of scientific obscurity, threatening sometimes, concealing insidious elements. Other times they can be enticing, alluring, but always difficult to understand. Yet they are around us, always and in quantities that are intimidating to the individual. Chemicals is, as we know, one of the major topics for the CSD 18. But little did we know, at least public outside these rooms, that between 80 to 100,000 chemicals are registered to be in use. The vast majority of chemicals in use today have not been adequately tested for harm. Neither have they been tested for their combined impacts on children and other vulnerable groups. There is a particular risk from exposure to a variety of chemical substances contained in products, but there is no global system for providing information on chemicals in products to consumers and others. And this is one of the challenges that CSD is supposed to address. Today, we're going to start lifting the veil of obscurity surrounding our chemical world, making us aware of the chemicals surrounding us, understand their threats, their potential, but above all, see how we can live in a greener and healthier life surrounded as we are by chemicals. Chapter 19 of Agenda 21 emphasizes that the broadest possible awareness of chemical risks is a prerequisite for achieving chemical safety. And with this in mind, the combined UN secretariats of the three conventions on chemicals will today launch the Safe Planet campaign, a UNEP and FAO-led campaign. I would add also a campaign for a healthier life. The campaign had a trial run or a southern launch in Indonesia in February, the opening day of the Governing Council for UNEP. But today we will mark the grand opening of a campaign to make people aware of their chemical every day. Known as body burden issues because that is what we may assume that the chemicals are, and they are most probably inside us, this campaign will highlight the ups and downs of the chemical world and what we can do to remedy and even remove some of the chemical challenges. Thus, I am proud to introduce one of the co-chairs of this campaign, a person who already has accomplished a lot in her life and will be an inspiration to everything she decides to be a part of. Stine-Lise Hattestad-Bratsberg is many things. She's an expert skier in freestyle, no less, a field in the noble art of skiing where she has won several times the Norwegian Championship, the European Championship, the World Championship. She's twice been World Cup champion and has won the bronze in Olympic Games, which she just topped by an Olympic gold medal in 1994, no less.
Maybe Stina can sit already?
Yes, I think she should come up here. Yeah. But resting on her laurels has never been a position Stina has been comfortable with. So she has had TV shows in Japan and in Norway and became interested in issues related to the Olympic Creed, where integrity plays an important role. She has served on a number of different committees to promote health, lastly been the co-chair of the Norwegian Anti-Doping Board, founded her own company some time back, and is now the CEO of a consulting firm on precisely corporate social responsibility, the environment and health. No wonder she has accepted the challenge of becoming a co-chair, and it is almost a wonder that she's here, but she is very busy all year long. But here she is next to me, Stine-Lise Hattestad-Bratsberg, and I welcome you to the podium.
I would like to introduce gentlemen over here. Professor Åke Bergman, I hope I'm pronouncing correctly. He is a professor in the University of Stockholm, environmental chemistry professor at Stockholm University since 1993, and he has published almost 300 peer-reviewed original scientific articles. The total number of papers he has published is unknown to him. Bergman has a particular expertise in the chemistry of environmental contaminants and human and wildlife exposure to pollutants. He has been heavily involved in research on endocrine disruptors, metabolism of POPs, and brominated flame retardants. He's frequently appointed as a national, international, and intergovernmental expert. Bergman is a founding member of IPCP, which is the International Panel on Chemical Pollution.
Hello, everybody. First of all, I'm very pleased to be here today and to be in a position where I actually can contribute to the Safe Planet campaign. It's a United Nations campaign for responsibility on hazardous chemicals and waste. It is an honor for me to be asked to be one of the chairpersons, and I've said yes to be the co-chair of this global awareness campaign. UN has invited me and other athletes and high-profile individuals and international experts to engage in a dialogue on how human monitoring, biomonitoring information can support the Millennium Development Goals and World Summit on Sustainable Development 2020 target to achieve sound management of chemicals and waste. But I must admit, I have not been very concerned about this issue earlier. With my background, it's actually quite surprising because I've been, as most at least, extremely concerned about my own health. And my background or my play yard has been nature. I've spent most of my days outside. I really want to talk a little bit about the health issue today because as an athlete, I have been very concerned. I've been having strongly diets, eating the right amount of proteins, fat, carbohydrates. I've been drinking enough water. If we trained or competed on high altitudes, we had 5 liters of water every day. I didn't go to parties where people smoke. I didn't drink alcohol. I measured the percentage of fat in my body. I measured the percentage of iron and so on. But I never, ever thought about chemicals. DDT, POPs, and furan was not of my concern at all. It actually never even hit me that chemicals could have an impact on my health and my performance. Were I exposed to it? Did it affect my achievements and me? How, when, and where? Those were questions I actually never asked when I was competing. This morning, I took my blood test. I still got evidence. I took this test because I want to measure the chemicals in my own body. And I'm very excited to get the results. But I would have been even more excited if I also could know the effects of those chemicals in my body. And not only in my body, but for the health for everybody. Assessing the lifestyle of the chemicals is important. Today, we do not know enough. I therefore challenge governments to promote and to support the Safe Planet campaign with enough funding so that we can start with biomonitoring to understand the effects of chemicals on the human body and subsequently deal with it. I also invite sports athletes, champions all over the world to ask for this information, to assess the health status of their own body. This might help them to achieve their goals on the sports arena, but much more important, it can help children and human beings in our day-to-day life to live in a world with less hazardous chemicals and waste, a goal I think we all want to achieve. And I must admit that earlier today when I took the blood test, I actually didn't think very much about the result for my own body, but I started to think about my two sons at home that is just 10 and 12 years old. What have it been the results if they were the one who took the blood test? So I think this is an issue that everybody should do something with, and I hope I can be a part of it, and I'm very glad to be a part of the Safe Planet campaign that UN has started. And I was fortunate to have somebody with me today when I did the blood test. And that was someone who's probably much more known than I ever will be and ever have been here in the States. And this is Ed Bagley. He's an artist. No, you want to do the intro? No?
Ed Bagley Jr.
Jr.
His father is famous.
His father is famous. He is famous. He's an actress. He's having his own TV show. He's been into TV for films, everything, for years. So some of you have might seen Living with Ed, a TV show has been on for it's the fourth season. So, Ed, I think you have much more to say about yourself than I can do, and I'm very pleased that you took the test together with me today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that introduction, and thank you for going through that test with me today. We did it together. We had some blood taken. I'll just say briefly all the scientific expertise that I hope you'll take away from this. You will get from the scientists. I am not a scientist, but I'm fortunate enough to know, thank you, quite a few scientists, and they are around me here in this panel. And they have a tremendous amount of data that I think we all need to know more about. So my role here today is to bring attention to them and their fine work, their wonderful work, clinical work that they've done over the years, very scientific work that they've done, telling us more. And we will learn more with this body burden test, which we had today. We'll learn more about what it's like for a 60-year-old man growing up in the San Fernando Valley and taking all the chemical hits that I did. I drank ant poison as a one-year-old crawling on the floor. I wasn't supervised briefly, and I drank some ant poison, and hopefully they pumped most of it out of my stomach, and I don't know what that did to me. I worked over a trichloroethylene tank. Trich was a very dangerous chemical, and there were no respirators or such things in 1968 when I worked over a trichloroethylene tank degreasing parts. And I lived next door to a dry cleaner, and there's a lot of perchloroethylene blowing in our window every day for many years. When I say next door, I mean right next door. And so I took a lot of chemical hits. And basically, my generation, I'm 60 years old. People who are baby boomers like me, born right after World War II. I was born in 1949, a few years after. And we are the first generation that are guinea pigs, if you will, to live with this much very different and new chemistry. Chemistry has been around for many years. We need chemistry to survive, of course. Let me speak in favor of the good chemistry, like deoxyribonucleic acid. That's pretty good chemistry. Adenine binding to thymine and guanine to cytosine on a backbone of sugar and phosphate. Pretty good stuff. That's a miracle of DNA. We like that chemistry. We like lots of other kinds of chemistry that we rely on. Sodium chloride is a pretty nice compound. We need some of that to survive and many other things that we need. And there's many safe and wonderful chemicals that are part of nature we lived with for many years. Then we got into some new stuff recently, and certainly after World War II, with a lot of DDT, a lot of chlorinated hydrocarbons, a lot of organophosphates, and new things. I had some of them before then, certainly, but they really became widespread. So mine is the first generation that is around so much flame retardant, so much, you know, perchloroethylene, so much trichloroethylene, so much, new and different stuff. You pump gas, you get ethylene dibromide a little bit on you when you pump it, benzene, and you go into the dry cleaner, you get some more perk, and on and on. There's a litany of chemicals. And so what is that combined burden? Sometimes one and one equals, you know, two. Sometimes one and one equals nine, depending on the two chemicals that are being combined together. Sometimes one and one neutralizes each other and they equal zero. So what are those chemicals in combination? So we are going to see the results of these tests soon, and I'm very anxious to see them. How much of those chemicals that I told you that I'm aware that I got hit with by drinking ant poison as an infant, and et cetera, how much of those remain in my body? How many things are in my body, flame retardants of things of which I have no count way to measure? We're going to find that out. Drinking out of a hot plastic bottle in a car before I knew better in the 60s and 70s, before I stopped buying water bottles and drink out of a metal bottle all the time, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to find out a lot from this body burden test. So I'm just so proud to be here. I'm so proud to know the many scientists I've met here and the ones I've known before today who are doing this work as we learn more. Unfortunately, for many years, we have had an attitude that dilution is a solution to pollution. We just throw stuff in the ocean. We put stuff underground, hoping it never bothered us again. And guess what? It migrated into the groundwater, as they saw in Woburn, Massachusetts, and many other communities where there's a lot of toxic hotspots, or many, Love Canal, many places around the country where we saw a lot of toxic hotspots. Kids very sick in the Central Valley where there's a lot of pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides used. And I knew Cesar Chavez, the great labor leader, and he worked with those people who got hit by those chemicals and very badly and saw the problems that they faced, the health problems that they faced. So I saw firsthand a lot of these effects, and I see it to this day in Kettleman City and other places in the Central Valley. So I think it's real. I want to be scientific about it. I want to learn in a quantifiable way what is in me, what is in some of these other wonderful, brave people who have taken the test, and what does it mean? How can we rid ourselves of it? And most importantly, how can we stop using chemicals that we don't truly, truly need? Are you willing to live a life with, you know, without a dandelion-free lawn or without disposable cameras and saran wrap? I am. Sign me up. You know, there are things that I'm willing to forgo to have a healthier planet. And I'm willing to pay the price for things that might cost fractionally more to handle things in a safe manner. I think most people are. And we'll learn more about it from this wonderful test. So I'm so proud and happy that Howard asked me to be part of this. Where's Howard? There he is. And Michael and everybody and all these wonderful scientists and leaders who are here today. And Donald for putting this all together here. And all the good folks at UNEP. I'm just proud and honored to be here. Thank you so much.
I think Michael will introduce one more person here.
Thank you, Ed. And just to add a note that Ed's actually also a playwright, and his award-winning play, Cesar and Ruben, addressed this issue of farm workers and health in the Central Valley of California. I'm very honored to be sitting here next to you today. The first person who taught me the phrase body burden is Cheryl Patton, now the director of the Biomonitoring Resource Center at Commonweal in Bolinas, California. Commonweal and Cheryl brought to the CSD the first privately conducted study of biomonitoring in 2002, I believe it was. But before then, she introduced to me and to a group of concerned citizens the term body burden. Chemicals infecting, entering our organisms that don't belong there. She'll tell you more about that, but I would just like to welcome her to this dialogue between Safe Planet supporters, UNEP, FAO, and citizens across the globe to explore biomonitoring for a healthier planet, safer planet. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here and an honor to talk to you about biomonitoring. Biomonitoring can tell us many stories. If you were biomonitored today, your results would tell you a little bit about the story of your life. It would tell you about the story of what you did today. If you took a shower and used fragrance in a shampoo, probably you're exposed to phthalates. And phthalates in pregnant women are related to the resulting of little boys born with low testosterone levels. If you're around computers, CDs, DVDs, bisphenol A laden water, plastic water bottles, your body would show levels of bisphenol A. Bisphenol A in low levels is shown to create is linked to heart problems in adults. If you were walking around a golf course, you might have levels of pesticides and chlorpyrifos, and your body burden level would give that information. If you were using flame retardants in the carpets or foam in your car, or the dashboard of your car, your carpets and different kinds of textiles, those PBDEs would show up in your body as well. In a recent study that monitored pregnant women, women who were pregnant during the time of the trade towers in New York when those buildings went down, showed that the offspring of those children are suffering from neurological difficulties because of the PBD exposure in utero. So your biomonitoring results can tell you a lot about what you've been doing in your life, what you've been doing that very day. It's a very interesting thing to do. Biomonitoring results can be used to evaluate the effectiveness of regulations, the effectiveness of the implementation of these regulations. They can be used to encourage corporate responsibility, and many corporations, once they realize that toxic chemicals in their products may not be molecularly bound to the materials of the product and therefore migrate into human bodies, often change the formulation of their products. It can help us refocus science. It can help us all become aware of the need to get these toxic chemicals out of their body. I was in a project in 2002, biomonitored for 214 chemicals. My body contains 108 of these. Something like 60 are related to reproductive health difficulties. Something like 50 are related to hearing difficulties, skin problems. I think something like 60 related to were considered to be carcinogens. I want you to know that I have never given permission for my body to be used as a toxic waste storage site. And I don't know where to send the bill for the rental of that space for toxic chemicals. So one of the things we've been working on in the United States is we're very much supportive of a new WHO UNEP program, which is biomonitoring breast milk around the globe for the presence of POPs chemicals. And this is really a landmark project. It'll give us a sense of exposures all around the globe. And we'll do it, be done possibly every 5 years. We'll get a sense of what regulations are working, and we expect to see these levels of POPs chemicals go down. And that's a very exciting possibility. But the question is always, how do you talk about chemicals in breast milk without alarming women and scaring them away from breastfeeding? Is it possible to do that? So a project that we're working on called the Moms and Pops Project has been looking at breast milk monitoring programs around the world, see what works, what doesn't work in terms of data communication, what the effects are, and we've decided to use what we came up with, and we biomonitored 5 young women, 5 first-time mothers, one each in Kenya, Alaska, Czech Republic, the Philippines, and Mexico, and then talked to these women about the toxic chemicals in their breast milk, at the same time fully informing them about the enormous benefits of breastfeeding, that the solution to chemicals in breast milk is not formula, and to talk to them about the importance of biomonitoring and encourage them to step forward and be brave and talk about it. And these women all stepped forward and said, yes, they want to talk about chemicals in breast milk, and yes, they want to talk to other women about the importance of breastfeeding, and yes, they want to join together and persuade governments to pass the regulations that are necessary to get toxic chemicals out of all our bodies, at the same time while encouraging breastfeeding. Still, the most important thing a woman can do for the health of her child being born into this very contaminated world in which we live. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you very much. One wonders if one wants to know all these information about one's own body. But before we allow the question and answer session, I will ask Professor Bergman to say a few words, and then we'll allow the audience into questions. Professor Bergman.
Yeah, well, I'm here basically to introduce a film. Is this the right place to do that, or should I do that later?
At the end,
okay. Well, in that case, it's entirely unprepared. Well, it's wonderful to be here, and I've been working with chemicals in humans and wildlife for 35 years, and what you just heard, I can just confirm that, and that's what you're going to see later on. I picked up one word here. It's been actually mentioned twice today, and it's the matter of alarming. I'm a scientist. I never alarmed or made any alarms. I'm trying to transfer the scientific knowledge we have in science to the public, to policymakers, and the black text on the papers is not what we are putting there. It's not what's in media. And I think it's our responsibility to actually bring forward the situation that we are at. I have had hope, and I still have, for the future, but what we really do need is to understand that we are in a situation where we, in fact, do see start to see effects in humans. I was part of a endocrine disruptor document prepared by WHO 10 years ago, and we concluded in that document that the endocrine disrupting effects, they were confirmed in wildlife. Different effects and different wildlife species. And we were not really able to agree on that the same things were observed in humans. Over the last 10 years, we have come forward. We now have very strong evidence actually seeing effects in humans. The most sensitive ones and also those with the highest body burdens, that's the one. I mean, it's special individuals that may be hit in those cases, and we are not talking only about the United States, Europe, Western world. I'm talking very much about Central America, South America, Africa, Asia. We have I travel in Bangladesh and Cambodia in December. And I saw the misuse, the extreme misuse of pesticides, and where farmers were symptoms because of the use of pesticides. Some of them were really sick. But it was a way to show that they had money and that they could actually invest in pesticides. That's not the right way to do it. Also using pesticides where they could not read the label on them. We have the e-waste problem in parts of China, in a number of countries in Africa. We still have a number of other very traditional problems in other parts of the world. I've seen children from Nicaragua working at a dump site, living at the dump site with sky-high concentrations of brominated flame retardants. And this is what we need to face, and this is why it's very important that you are acting and helping us to transfer the information to all policymakers in order to make it come through that changes can be implemented. I think that's where I stop.
Thank you, Åke. Is it possible that we may ask you questions, Cheryl and Åke? Do you have any questions you wanted to ask, Ed?
No. I'm more here to learn than to tell anything.
Okay. I just have one question concerning the breastfeeding. I see it's a big problem to both inform and not scare the women. In Scandinavian countries where I come from, it's been very, very important that you breastfeed your child as long as possible and everything. And I know they're doing the same. They're having... I don't have that long back. Okay. I was talking about the breastfeeding, and from Scandinavia where I'm from, it's been very... How do you say? You're a successful mother if you feed your children with breast milk as long as possible. So... How do you want to inform? I know you talked a little bit about it, but could you say some more?
I'd be glad to. And I think
turn it on, please.
I think it is complicated, and it's very important to communicate these results with great sensitivity and awareness of cultural traditions and informational needs. But what we have found when we looked at different studies is that when women are fully informed from the very beginning about toxic chemicals, about the advantages of breastfeeding, about the chemicals that are also found in formula, and they're supported by their family, their lactation consultant, and their family physician in breastfeeding throughout the whole process. And when they are also given the opportunity to come together and talk about the reactions, that women do continue to breastfeed, that they understand that, as one woman in Kenya said, Yashir Sahel, she says, well, the air is contaminated, but we do not stop breathing. And she was, of course, saying that about breast milk, that breast milk is important. And the fact that it has chemicals in it does not mean we stop breastfeeding. We do whatever we can to preserve the integrity of breast milk. And, of course, when we talk about information about breast milk, there are not a whole lot of studies that say this, but there are a few that indicating that breast milk seems to reverse any damage that was chemically induced in utero. So that's always something that's important to point out. And another thing, of course, that all the studies that show the enormous benefits of breastfeeding are done with milk that's contaminated, because as far as we know, there's no other kind anywhere on the face of the earth. So I'm just always struck by the courage and the wisdom of these young mothers stepping forward, because they're willing to take on the issue. And it's a difficult issue to talk about, but they're willing to do it, and they are doing it. So thank you for the question.
I saw you had a question, Oka, but maybe we should ask the answer as well. Okay. We take that, and then we take a question from the podium afterwards.
Well, I just want to extend the answer a little bit. Well, first thing, not all chemicals are actually transferred to the mother's milk. That's one thing. The other thing is that something that hasn't really been addressed so far is that, I mean, we do see elevated levels in small children, very much due to what's in our homes nowadays, because the hand-to-mouth activity of children is actually giving another boost of chemical exposure. Mother's milk is sort of the second step in the process. The transfer over the placenta is the first one. And this is the sad fact. I mean, this is the society we have built, and this is why actions are needed. And I don't think it, of course, breastfeeding should continue. It's a matter of well, education and information very much.
Thank you. Is there any question?
Thanks, everybody, for the presentation. It sounds like a very important campaign and a somewhat difficult one. Sounds like you're off to a good start. I think the Moms and Pops title is brilliant. So congratulations on that. A couple of specific questions. On the body monitoring test, how expensive is each one? Are you advocating that individuals all take it as much as possible? How long does it take? How painful is it? And how specific is it in terms of what chemicals are revealed and how much information you're going to give the individuals taking it as to what the effects on them would be? And then just a whole second area of what your plans are for the campaign and how widely your goal is to disseminate the information.
I can't answer all these technical questions, but I can answer that the test is not very difficult and it doesn't hurt. It's just a blood test. It's a lot of blood, but it's just a blood test. You might could ask answer more of the questions, Olga.
Yeah, I'll second that. It's entirely painless and didn't take that long to take 15 vials of blood. Really didn't take that long. As I said, no pain.
But they are extremely expensive. I mean, a test like this may cost $25,000 U.S. dollars to pursue in relation to all the chemicals. And it's time-consuming. There is definitely not resources in the world to do this on a more general basis. The specificity in the analysis are extremely high. We go down to the chemical structures and know exactly what we are analyzing for. The next step is to say that this chemical is causing that effect, and that's where we really come to a shortage. It's basically not possible because of the cocktail effects that we are talking about. We just had a report by a researcher, Dr. Eskenazi, in California, that reported that the time to pregnancy has increased from 6 months to 12 months in mothers with high levels of brominated diphenyleters. It's a brominated flame retardants. But, of course, she cannot say that it's only these kind of chemicals that are giving this effect, because the mothers do carry a number of others. But several of these chemicals do have the same endpoints. So, I mean, that's where we have sort of a problem.
Yes, it's expensive to test for these chemicals, but if you're very selective and you know what you're goal is, you could be a little bit selective. For example, for testing for chlorpyrifos, which is a pesticide used out of California Central Valley, it's something like $250 per collection and lab analysis. But for the environmental working group that biomonitored cord blood, for something like 330 chemicals, the cost was $10,000 per sample. So it can be quite expensive. But once you find a chemical in cord blood, it seems like it would be worthwhile to make sure you knew whether that chemical was toxic or not before it was allowed to be used on the market. So biomonitoring does help us set priorities in terms of what chemicals should be tested first, I think, and what chemicals should be removed from market until we know what the toxic effects are. If it's in the blood of a developing fetus, it has no business being there. Let's get it out until we know exactly what's going on with it. We do know that, for example, POPs chemicals, they're lipophilic, they go to fatty tissue. Where is the fat in the developing fetus? Not so much, except the brain. So that's where a lot of POPs chemicals end up. And in the United States in general, something like 17% of all children in schools in the U.S. have some kind of developmental disability. Is it because of the high use of PBDEs? Well, of course, we all know these diseases are multifactorial. It has to do with nutrition, stress levels, genetic inheritance, other diseases, socioeconomic status, and so on, as well as toxic chemicals. But if we remove those toxic chemicals, we feel it increases the resiliency of the body to withstand the effects of all the other kinds of negative factors that might be related to adverse health outcomes. So I think even though we don't always understand the associations between a toxic chemical exposure and a disease, it's sure for sure worth getting rid of them until we understand a lot more.
Concerning the campaign, if it's going to be a widely campaign, all I can say and all I know is that at least has been asked if they can take part in this. They were from all over the world, and they will not only represent Scandinavian and American, but they're coming from all over the world. And but you had a question as well. Take the microphone, please.
Big sound about, yeah.
Hi, my name is Lisa. I'm from the youth delegation Sustain Us. And I was curious about when will you get the results and what will you personally do with them? Will you make them, publish them? And when all this data is done, what will happen?
We think that it takes too much time to get the results because we're very impatient. But for maybe some of the results will be ready in 3-4 months, but the whole results will take quite a long time. But what we hope we can do the results is actually to ask the questions, to ask the governments, what effect do these results actually have on my health? And not only my health, but everybody's health, so that we can get more research, we can get more facts concerning the chemicals. And we want to go public with the results from our results, yeah.
I think it's extremely important to have well-known faces, individuals doing this. Having Ed and Stina doing it now is perfect. We have seen that the Commissioner for the Environment, Margaret Wallström, was taking it in Europe. And that has a tremendous impact because all by a sudden people realize that this is in all of us. And I think that needs to be transferred in order to get a public opinion much, much stronger than we have today in order to get research money to actually get the guts to make decisions, because there's a number of decisions that can be taken tomorrow, as far as I see it.
If I may also ask a question. I noticed on a bus running through New York, an advertisement said, donate blood and give the best of you to somebody. Well, the information you've just given us make me doubt that now. In my brief introduction, which I took from solid information from the conventions, they state that between 80 and 100,000 registered chemicals are used, but not many are tested for risks and everything. So my question would be, how many are really tested, and what will it take to register all this? And when you say that it costs $2,500 to test, when will this become so vast a public information campaign that many people can use it? I mean, there are some barriers here that obviously need to be overcome.
I actually have an answer to that question. It will take 5,000 years, we will probably not be around to see the result. Unfortunately, with the pace that we have, EU has done a risk assessment of, if I remember right, is something between 30 and 40 chemicals so far to go through the full risk assessment. But this is where I think policymakers comes in, that, I mean, we know based on chemical structures and properties related to those structures, what they may actually cause. So some of the worst chemicals can be assessed and acted on much faster, and has to be acted on faster, unless we should wait forever. And that's definitely not the answer. We need badly to act now.
Is there any other questions? Yes.
Thank you, and thank you for these great introductions. My name is Charlotta, and I come from the Swedish delegation. Sweden supports all the work on the chemicals area at the global level, and this is, of course, very interesting to hear about this campaign that you are about to start now. But I wonder, awareness amongst people is, of course, important to make impact on the decisions and the decision makers. But do you also have been planning or to give examples on what people can do in their day-to-day life to get, well, examples on that I think might be very useful, not to frighten everybody, but yet also to make examples on what you can do about it?
Absolutely. When we do a biomonitoring project, we spend a lot of time with the participants in a couple of different ways. And one is to sit down with them in person or conference call and look at their questionnaire we give them that helps us to set where the pathways of exposure might have been, and then work with them to try to eliminate some of those pathways of exposure and very directly suggest that they might want to do this, might want to do that, change products that they buy. And encourage and support them. So there's long lists and websites, and we tend to support them for quite a long period of time to help them make better choices. And that's a really important part of biomonitoring, getting the data back to individuals so they know what they can do personally to make changes. I think it's really, really important. And the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control in the United States, does not deliver individual results back to people they've tested. But I understand the EU pilot project is required by right to know laws to give information back upon request. And the California Biomonitoring Program does this as well. So I think having that information about your body burn is enormously useful. But then people also realize that as many as careful choices you make, some exposures happen because there aren't enough regulations or corporate policies, and that you have to do both. You have to make personal choices, and you may want to get involved in the political arena as well. Thank you for that question.
I'd just like to say one thing we can do for each other. They may not even be the specific chemicals that your body is burdened with after you get the results of your test, but to just lead a more of a non-toxic life. to eliminate toxic cleaning products from your life as best you can. You know, I've been out there with many good people protesting a hazardous waste site they're going to put in near a neighborhood, and I'm going, the worst hazardous waste site is not near your home, it's in your home, it's under your sink. Let's get rid of a lot of that stuff. Stop using it. Vinegar and water is cheap but can clean a lot of things. Baking soda. Do some of those things. Try to buy as many non-toxic things as you can. You know, get over that notion of the lawn, the putting green kind of lawn with all the pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides. I have a beautiful drought-tolerant garden. I took out my lawn when I moved into my current house in 88, and it's the pride of the neighborhood, and there's been no pesticides, herbicides, fungicides. I have a vegetable garden and fruit trees, and I just do beneficial insects, IPM, integrated pest management, you know, around my house. And, you know, there's lots of things you can do, and do them all. Try to seek out the most non-toxic products yourself, and that will have an effect over time in your life and the lives of many, I think.
Ed has a lot of good ideas for doing it himself, but Michael, you are in charge of the Safe Planet and campaign, and the concrete examples of how you're going to inform the people. Do you have an answer to Sweden?
Yes, and I also want to thank Sweden for their participation in next week's premiere of the Stefan Jarl film, submission in defense of the unborn, a documentary film about body burden, which we will preview in a short clip in a few moments near the end of the session. Just a word about the UNEP FAO-led Safe Planet campaign, the United Nations campaign for responsibility on hazardous chemicals and waste. The decision to launch the campaign came as part of a unique synergies, triple-headed meeting of the parties to the three conventions, the Basel Convention, the Rotterdam Convention, and the Stockholm Convention. So representing among them 172 governments that are parties to one or more of those three conventions, as well as very significant observer states, such as the United States, which is not a party to either of those three, or to any of those three conventions, but is very active involved in chemicals reform, chemicals policy. We were challenged at the Food and Agriculture Organization, which is the co-secretariat of the Rotterdam Convention, and at UNEP, which is the secretariat of the Basel and Stockholm Conventions and co-secretariat of Rotterdam. We were challenged to come up with a synergistic approach to chemicals, public awareness, and outreach, to combine our messages in a way that the public could hear them, and to do this at a global level, to do this at the community level globally, which is a very high order for a small number of UN officers working in Geneva and Rome. But fortunately, we have a very large network of partnerships and a very dedicated group of volunteers and experts working in allied institutions, or individuals like Ed Begley Jr. and Stina Hotstadt, who are willing to volunteer their time to help us bring this message through. Also, some of the analytical work and some of the costs associated with the analysis, the dollar figure that we give on this project, or for each subject volunteering their blood for analysis, is a fraction of the real cost if you count all the in-kind contributions and hours and hours and hours that went into communicating and bringing the information forward and preparing this kind of effort. We have a number of volunteers, some of which are here today. I see Miroslav Bobek, the director of the Prague Zoo, is here, and he is one of the Safe Planet campaign supporters, did an action last March at the Prague Zoo on waste management. You're all invited to hear more about that action at the Learning Center beginning at 3 o'clock today in Conference Room D, Greening Waste Management, where he'll talk about how waste management issues and toxic pollution are tied to the conservation of gorillas in Africa. So this is an offshoot of the Safe Planet campaign that we could not have planned or foreseen. We simply create a platform, and our volunteers bring their ideas and their passions and their information forward, and that's what creates the exchange and the richness of this campaign. We have a number of others who have already pledged publicly to have their body chemistry tested. One of them, Yu Yun, is here, the Goldman Environmental Award winner for small island states in 2009. She's from Bali, Indonesia. So this is not, to answer Stina's point, a Nordic or a European campaign. It is a global campaign. This is the second of two events on Body Burden Forum, the first being held in Indonesia, which featured quite, I say, well, the southern hemispheric regions. So we are stretching ourselves in this campaign, and we hope that through the contributions of a lot of agencies and organizations and individuals, we can make this a high-impact, cost-effective campaign.
I think it was one more question out there. Yeah.
Thank you very much. I have a very simple and ignorant question. I have to excuse myself. About the breastfeeding, mother's milk's biomonitoring, what I understand is that the mother with first child and the second child, the level of the contaminants will decrease if you compare the two, right? Which means that you can also say that by breastfeeding, the mother's body is actually cleansed, just releasing the fat part of the body fluid, whereas men will not have such chance. Do you think there will be any difference if you compare the adults, you know, the senior women and men, by the action of breastfeeding, the effect of being cleansed by the release?
Well, I would like to say that in my perspective, it's actually a little bit exaggerated that women are not excreting that very much through the mother's milk. There is a Norwegian study just finished that where they were delivering milk the mothers were delivering milk every month, and they saw a slight decline in the levels over 12 months. But of course, it's a way to release some, but it's sometimes said in such a way that a lot of the contaminants are released to the children. Some are, but no, it's not really a big excretion.
Michael, you want to add something?
Yes, in our background briefing on this biomonitoring project, we talked to Dr. Heidi Fiedler, the senior scientist from UNEP Chemicals Group in Geneva, and she actually informed us that it is true that there is a discharge, but after 5 to 7 years, the body builds up the burden again, and a mother who waits 5 or 7 years and then has a second child is in the same position that she would be in for the first child. Their body reaches equilibrium in their chemical loading. And so the second child born 7 years after the first would be similarly, let's say, at risk from that exposure pathway.
Is there any more question? Yes.
Thank you, and thank you very much for this interesting side event, which provided very good information what is going on with respect to chemicals. My name is Gabi Eigenmann. I'm from the Swiss delegation. I'm involved in the international chemicals and waste management issue, especially with the three conventions, Stockholm, Rotterdam and Basel. And I just wonder, how will this information or from this test be fed in these three conventions? Or I know that they have next year they have all a conference of the parties. How will this convention or the parties to the convention be informed about this? And the second question is, do you also test the blood if there are nanoparticles? Because it's a very new issue, but it's an emerging issue, and would maybe be interesting to also to to have that, but I don't know if that would also extend the costs for that test. And finally, maybe I was not too attentive at the beginning because I was eating my sandwich. I don't know how many people are involved in this test. I mean, we have now two people here who agreed to make this test. Are there any other people ready to join this initiative? Thank you.
Michael, do you want to answer?
Yes, thank you. There will be two ways, at least, that the three conventions parties will be informed. There will be a report about the Safe Planet campaign, which is part of the implementation of the Omnibus Synergies decision taking at the Bali triple conferences of the parties of the three conventions. So there's an implementation report. That's a rather formal answer. Maybe the more public answer is that we will launch a Safe Planet campaign website and a portal where not only the information about the pledges and supports and supporting statements of the Safe Planet campaign will be collected. So Ed Begley's statement, which we read out at the first biomonitoring event, the Body Burden Forum in Bali, will appear there. But also the pledges of those supporters who have said they will undergo this kind of study. The answer now is the number is somewhat smaller than 10. I won't say exact because we've had pledges and we're trying to schedule those tests. It is also a question of resources. As this is very expensive, we are carefully accepting offers of donations, blood donations, but of course also financial donations, so that we can finance this in a rolling manner. There are more people willing to take this test and make their body burdens public than we have resources to service. And it's very important, as Stina said, that we have the opportunity to communicate with all markets, all communities, all in all languages, at least of the United Nations, in all continents, in all parts of the globe. So we have to take a balanced approach. We have one volunteer from the U.S. We have one volunteer now from Norway. We have other volunteers, but we will take them one by one in order to balance the opportunity this message brings.
I think it's also important to say that the Safe Planet campaign, they never asked either Ed or me if we wanted to take the test. It's actually the other way around. The celebrities and those people you are asking if they want to join into the Safe Planet campaign, we ask if we can take the test. So it's just a question of money and time, I guess. You had one more question up here in the podium.
Yeah, I have a question to the two professors who can campaign on this with knowledge and substance. It's almost fitting that we're sitting here today talking about the chemical issues, and it's a Stockholm, Rotterdam, and Basel convention. Agent Orange was something that we grew up with in the 1970s. And the person that brought the political focus on this was actually Prime Minister Olof Palme when he opened the first conference on the environment in 1972. So my polemical question to you is, how important are these three conventions, both politically speaking and also getting them out to the public?
Well, do you want an honest answer or, I give you the honest answer. I've been a little worried about the conventions for some time because, I mean, it's extremely important that there is power behind the conventions. And one limitation, if we look at the Stockholm Convention, is that basically chemicals that has already been regulated are regulated in the POP Convention. But now it's improving with the new chemicals coming up. I have much less experience with the Rotterdam and Basel conventions. I think they are more into actions, transport and other parts of the cycle for chemicals. So I have not so much to say about them, but for the Stockholm Convention, it is important that we get to the most important ones, and those are the ones that are still in production.
Thank you. Thank you for all the questions. In the end here, we want to show you just a little bit on the screen behind us. And Jan Gustav, do you want to introduce the film?
Well, I'm not going to introduce them because I don't know them as well as those who produced them, but we will see a video clip, and Professor Bergman, you will say two words about that. And then we will have a video clip also from Miroslav Bubek and his Prague Zoo element, I think.
Yeah, related to the Stockholm Convention's activities and the listing of new pops, I wanted to mention events that we are planning tomorrow morning from 10 to 1. It's 3 hours a learning session. You will learn more about how Stockholm Convention is working towards the pops, elimination of the pops, and it is an international agreement that calls for global action. And, well, you will see a little bit of the effectiveness, but we are working on it. And the biomonitoring is the one of the tools that we can evaluate how effective the Stockholm Convention is. So I welcome you to tomorrow morning's learning center. It will be in conference room D, on the second floor. Thank you very much for the floor.
Thank you. Okay, would you like to introduce the film?
Dear diplomat actors and sports champions, ladies and gentlemen, it's I really like to thank you, the organizers, on behalf of the documentary film director Stefan Jarl and myself, in the position of being the scientific advisor of the movie, to have had the chance to come here and show a little bit of the film submission with the subtitle "In Defense of the Unborn." This is a film that actually was had its premiere in Sweden less than 2 weeks ago, and it was shown in Copenhagen yesterday. And the background is that Stefan Jarl, that is a very well-known documentary film director in Sweden, came to me almost 2 years ago and, talked about the concern he had about the huge number of chemicals being produced and things that you all already heard here. And that also the knowledge is limited and narrow in the public and so on and so forth. So he asked me, is this such a big problem as I imagine? And I just felt very sorry to tell him that it's bigger. And it's much more complicated than, basically most people imagine. And I'm talking about the number of chemicals and so on and so forth. We have already touched upon that. But it's also the question about what we know about the effects, and you also heard about that. I mean, we know that chemicals can, depending on their structure and properties, cause cancer, hormone-related effects, immunological effects, neurodevelopmental, reproductive, and so on. So, I mean, these are all covered in the film, and you will just see a little bit of it. What I want to say is that he is not only covering POPs, because POPs, in my view and in many of the scientists' view, is in a way simple to regulate and to act on and see what is what. But we have what is called semi-persistent chemicals, those that are having much shorter half-lives. And that's the huge number of chemicals out there that may interact in their transformations and in the body with biogenic reactions. So this is touched upon in relation to phthalates are being discussed. But, I mean, we are exposed to polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, PAHs, in the street corners and so on and so on. So anyway, he... he asked the question also if it was worth to do a film on chemicals. And, of course, my answer was yes. And I was very happy. I was contributing as good as I could with the scientific background. I was very pleased to see the result, and I hope you have a chance to see the full film. And with that, I'm going to just see if I can get this started. Like that. And depending on how this thing turns out, I might move the film a little faster here and there. You get the film from the very start, and it's based on interviews with 23 professors, but he has asked and talked to many, many more. So he has an in-depth knowledge on the subject. In fact, some of the film teams have, you are just talking like a scientist, Stefan, when he was in his second year of the film.
Six, I was asked to act in a film. The local paper had commissioned a film on how newspapers are made. My father had the idea to stage a car accident, which would then be the front page news. Dad was actually a baker, but he was also an amateur photographer. Apparently a good one, since he was asked to shoot the film, which I would be run over by a car. Dad said it was make-believe, but I was still scared. That big, ugly car would flatten me. What if I didn't survive? And yet, I agreed to being run over. Why do we submit? Yes. Why do we submit? Every one of us today has hundreds of foreign chemicals in our blood. They're not supposed to be there. I decide to find out what those chemicals are and what they do to us.
Vi sitter på en tickande bomb. Sedan andra världskriget har mänsklighetens användning av kemikalier fullkomligt exploderat. Från 1 miljon ton per år då till 500 miljoner ton nu. Kemikalieindustrin är den bransch i världen som växer allra snabbast. För närvarande omsätter den cirka 10% av den globala ekonomin. Det handlar om 100 000 kemikalier som vi människor har hittat på.
I consult Professor Åke Bergman at Stockholm University, a highly respected researcher who
work very hard to create new products and are very good at it. It's never been their responsibility to ask, is the product, is the molecule I've just designed likely to be toxic? They don't do that. That's not been viewed as their work. So what happens? They invent a new molecule. A manufacturer realizes, oh, that's a neat molecule. I can use it to make something really valuable. It goes into the marketplace. It expands in the marketplace. It becomes highly valuable. Lots of money starts to be made off of it. And 10 years later, some toxicologist says, it's in our bodies. What might it be doing? So there's this time gap between invention and taking it to market and beginning the toxicological tests, which inevitably leads to a battle. It's a battle between the people who are making money off of it, who say, oh, we've been using it for 10 years and we've never seen a problem, and the scientists who begin to ask the right questions, because some of these questions are quite complex.
Society had an impression in the past that we didn't need to worry about chemicals, and nature would take care of it. If you threw the chemicals on the ground, the sun would break them down, or the bacteria would break them down, or they would become dilute in the water and not dangerous. And we didn't know that that was not always the case.
What's new about these chemicals is they are not known to us. In other words, they come in under the radar, if you will, and enter our bodies subversively without our knowledge. And so this makes a problem for the study of these chemicals because you cannot ask. You could ask somebody, did you smoke? Did you take this and this and this? But you can't ask, did you take phthalate, because you don't know. So
I need to stop there. The time is running out. I hope you will be able to see the full film. It's a lot of information in its interview, so try to see it.
We have one more clip to show you from a different part of the world. It's 1 minute and, what did you say? 1 minute and approximately 27 seconds.
And while that clip is being prepared, we invite you to the Learning Center Greening Waste Management, which is coming up at 3:00, and that's in conference room D. So please, if you'd like to continue this dialogue on chemicals with the Basel Convention, you're welcome to join the Learning Center on that topic. We'll be discussing shipbreaking, e-waste, and mobile phone recycling, gorilla conservation. Also, tomorrow evening, there will be a cultural event related to body burden. The art exhibition, the Synergies exhibition of the Basel, Rotterdam, and Stockholm conventions, Substantialis Corporis Mixti, the substantial form of the blended body. This art exhibition features works of art created, some of them new, being seen for the first time, by 10 internationally renowned artists from 5 countries who have come together during CSD to present their artistic understanding of issues related to body chemistry and pollution and waste. That event will be at the Czech Center, Bohemian National Hall, at 321 73rd Avenue, 6:00. There will be a curator's lecture introducing the art at 6:45 and a reception following until 8:30. It's a free event, and you're all welcome.
Soundly electronic waste collected by our zoo to show the way to safely recycle electronic products and at the same moment to raise money to support protection of gorillas in the wild. This is why I support Save Planet, the United Nations campaign for responsibility on how.
Sorry about the technology problems here, but you figure it out, oh yeah?
Well, send a scientist to this, you know.
If you just be patient with him a little bit, we'll be ready.
I think you need to live with my shortcomings.
Hazardous chemicals and waste. I believe that the Save Planet campaign will bring concrete solutions to the challenge of chemicals and waste management to every corner of the planet. We can act today to make this a safe planet for all living creatures. Our duty is to take responsibility for all that we do. We also must care for chemicals, which place an increasing burden on the environment. Prague Zoo joins the Basel, Rotterdam and Stockholm conventions in this campaign to raise awareness of the global problem of hazardous chemicals and wastes. Together we are exploring ways to manage soundly electronic waste collected by our zoo, to show the way to safely recycle electronic products, and at the same moment to raise money to support protection of gorillas in the wild. This is why I support Save Planet, the United Nations campaign for responsibility on hazardous chemicals and waste. I believe that the Save Planet campaign will bring concrete solutions to the challenge of chemicals and waste management to every corner of the planet. We can act today to make this a safe planet for all living creatures.
Thank you very much. We've seen and heard quite a lot of, I was almost going to say, shocking information. And yet this is around us and it's part of our everyday life. Gloating is one of these fascinating human qualities. And especially when we can look people in the eyes, we know the answer and we say, I told you so. Rachel Carson tried 50 years ago in her book Silent Spring to say this. And I'm sure that if she'd been alive, she would be too modest to say, I told you so. What's different from then, in 1960 up until today, is that we have a global audience willing to listen. So maybe it takes a while to get around to action from just understanding this. We don't have another 50 years. We have the information, we have the willingness. We're at the start of a new century. We can make this a lot better than the one we left. With this information and with a campaign called Safe Planet, we couldn't do better. So let's go out there, make it safe, make the century better. And you can start right now by going to the Learner Center and learn more. Thank you very much for your attention.